You are listening to the award-winning Uncapped Podcast. Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Chris Sands, and today I am joined by the co-owner and head distiller of Dragon Distillery, Harad Yeldai.
Chris, thank you so much for having me here today. Oh,
thank you for coming. We had an absolute amazing time when I came out to try your old fashioned for my article, which you'll read an article that I did not think was going to be good.
Okay. And
just from the description of it, because it's like a lot of things. Like I've never had fig whiskey before, so I was a little iffy on that. But as I wrote in the article, it was amazing. I loved it. We had an amazing time. And I was like, you need to come on because you are a delightful man to talk to.
Thank you so much.
And everyone else needs to hear this.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate it. The fig vanilla whiskey is definitely unique and not like any other out there. So I see why you would think that.
Yeah, it's kind of that. You know, I get caught up in the pretentiousness a little bit in the whiskey world.
And right. Like,
and we'll start to think, like, when you're doing things like that, well, like, that can't possibly be good. I need it to be a rye or a bourbon.
Yep.
But then I tried it, and one, the old-fashioned tasted amazing. And then two, just the fig whiskey itself tasted amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Much to my surprise, but happiness.
There you go. Whiskey does bring happiness.
It does. It does. I mean, I've been starting 2 weeks ago, I was extremely happy.
That's
and
awesome.
Actually, I'll give you a little sneak peek that this article was so popular, I'm going to just do a whole series of finding the best ofs in Frederick.
Nice.
And espresso martinis. Be the next one. So I don't know. Do you have?
We do. Yeah. Okay. We have our own spin on espresso martini with the medieval mint vodka, which is our mint vodka with a hint of chocolate.
Oh.
And that's what we use for our espresso martini.
And it's kind of the perfect time to have that in there now since it's Shamrock Shake season.
Exactly. Exactly. But no, I'm super excited to read this article. I haven't read it yet, but I'm super excited.
So I will at some point be by to try an espresso martini. I just have to figure out how to grade espresso martinis because I have actually never had one.
Okay.
So that's going to make this adventure even more interesting because I don't even know what they're supposed to taste like. So I assume coffee.
Yep. It's just going to make it more fun.
Yeah. I mean, I love coffee. I very much enjoy alcohol, so I assume I will like an espresso martini.
I got a feeling you're going to like it. Let me know when you're ready to stop by.
I think my research will start next week.
Okay. All right.
Or the following. At least I haven't been given a deadline yet, so I'm just going to casually go through them this time so I don't have like the... So I don't procrastinate like this last one and then have to do 8 to 10 in 1 week.
I think the espresso is going to be a fun project.
I think especially because I'll be learned. I mean, I definitely learned a lot in this one, but the espresso martini one, I'll be learning a lot more because I don't know. I'm going to have to just do research to find out like what makes a good one.
Right.
I don't know.
Well, I'm excited for it and I'm excited to be a part of it.
So let's talk about Dragon and then also your story because you gave me a tiny bit of it and it almost makes me not care about Dragon. And yeah. I just want to hear your family's history because and it kind of plays in it. It feels like everyone involved in all of the alcohol industries have some like fantastic stories of their ancestry.
Yeah.
So I don't know if it's like some sort of like genetic thing that
that just gravitates people with interesting stories to the alcohol industry.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But yeah, so let's start out because it's been a really long time. I've done a Dragon episode, but we're still gonna want to go like tell the whole Dragon story, what Dragon does, your kind of like your philosophy, and because you're definitely a unique distillery in several aspects. But first, I want to hear your story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell everyone who is Harad.
Yeah. Well, you know, so I was born in Iran, and my family and I moved over to the United States just so that we could have a better life. And so in 1979, there was a revolution in Iran where the Islamic Republic overthrew the Shah of Iran. And, you know, the Shah was a little bit more laid back in general. And when the Islamic Republic came, everyone had to be Muslim in order to have all civil rights in Iran.
Because if I remember correctly, like that was one of those times where the Shah at that time wasn't like a fundamentalist.
That's correct.
Probably closer to a democracy. And then it was kind of like a hard line.
Right. Exactly. Okay. Exactly. You know, Iran had great relationships with Western countries. And after the Shah was overthrown, that just kind of went downhill. And at the time, my grandfather, who lives in Maryland right now, used to be the co-pilot for the Shah. And he used to, you know, fly the Shah around in helicopters and things like that. And when the revolution happened, actually him and his brother were both in the military working under the Shah. When the revolution happened, they had their names on the wall as people who are to be captured and, you know, executed.
And I'm just going to go out on a limb that, like, that's not a suggestion.
Like, no.
That's not a list that you would want to have been on because it's...
Right.
It's going to happen if they find you.
Exactly. And so...
I've seen a lot of movies about that region of the world.
You know, a lot of those movies are more real than people think. Yeah. It's insane. But, you know, long story short, they had their names on the wall. They were going after them. So my grandfather and his brother just kind of hid for a really long time to the point where they brought in my grandmother and said that, hey, we've already captured him. We just want to know who was helping him to, you know, stay low. And this was all false. They were just trying to trick her. They brought other family members in. They held him for months just saying that, you know, same story. And after a while, they just kind of gave up on it. And my grandfather and his brother stayed low for years. I mean, years. And after that, they just kind of came out of, I guess, quote unquote, hiding and just tried to have a low-key life. Now, with the Islamic Republic being in Iran and governing Iran, you had to be a Muslim in order to have all your basic citizen rights. And my family and I are not Muslim. And so we're Baha'is, and I don't want to get into religion and things like that, but just what we are. But because we weren't Muslim, we...
Actually, I've never heard of that religion before.
Yeah, so...
Is it like a variation of...
No, so it's actually its own religion.
Okay.
And the purpose is to unite all people of different, you know, race, color, gender. We believe in equality of, you know, everyone. And so, you know, not to get into the religion again... It just our whole goal is to bring, you know, unity and things like that into the world. But because of our religion and because we're not Muslim, we weren't able to attend we weren't able to get any education past high school. We couldn't work for the government. We couldn't work in the medical field. We couldn't work in the food industry. We couldn't work in the banking industry. You had to have the lowest level job possible. And
so basically what Muslims didn't want to do.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so it was just really tough to live a life, make a living, provide a good, you know, lifestyle for your family. And so my parents at that point, I was in like fifth grade. They decided to leave Iran and come to the United States. So we traveled to Turkey as refugees to, you know, find safe haven and have a better life. So we went to Turkey and we were supposed to be in Turkey for 4 months. So we were prepared to be in Turkey at the maximum 6 months financially and in every way possible. And guess what? 9/11 happened.
Oh, jeez.
9/11 happened and everything shut down. No one was able to come into the United States. And we ended up being there for a little over 18 months.
Well, especially I would assume having Iranian passports, that was a huge...
It did not help.
Right. You'd be saying like, look, I am not Muslim. I'm not... Exactly. I don't hate the United States. Yep. And they're like, yeah, whatever. No. We've heard that before.
Exactly. And that was exactly the case. And so, we were coming here because of our religion.
Yeah.
So 18 months, it wasn't an easy time for us. We weren't financially ready for it. We didn't know the language. We didn't know anyone. And I actually didn't go to school for almost 2 years. So my mom would just try to help me out and try to teach me English, but she actually didn't know English. So it was very interesting. And so we did the best we could. Yeah. And finally things opened back up and we came to the United States. And we actually lived in Columbia our whole lives, in Columbia, Maryland. And that's where I attended middle school and high school. And afterwards, I attended University of Maryland College Park. And after that, that's where I met my wife. And that's just kind of how I was connected to Dragon in a way. But, to say the least, it was a challenging life growing up as someone who didn't know the culture, who didn't know the language.
Well, that's a very formative age to have gone through all of that.
You know, kids were brutal. Kids were brutal at that age, especially back then.
I was going to say, like, that time frame, like, I can't imagine the prejudice that you had to have encountered in this area post 9/11, just like as soon as someone looked at you and you didn't speak perfect English and had an Iranian accent.
You wouldn't believe it. In freshman year of high school, I had teachers who would bring up things that had happened in the past between Iran and the United States and just kind of look down on me because of it. And at that point, I was very young and I didn't really understand that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Now that I'm looking back, I'm like, wow, these teachers were really like bringing these things up to a kid that knew nothing about anything.
Yeah.
And, that was messed up.
And just a little.
I had no one to go to. I had no one to talk to. If my parents wanted to come to the school, they had to get a translator to come in with them because they didn't speak English. And so it was a challenging life, but I am grateful for the experience because it's made me who I am today. I understand the difficulties that people go through day in and day out. I understand that every single person has a different challenge. And just because we're not seeing it doesn't mean that, the person doesn't have their own challenges.
What language did you grow up speaking?
Was Farsi.
Okay, I was going to guess that, but I know there's several languages in that region. Yep. My coworker from Iran that I worked with forever ago, she grew up speaking Farsi.
Yep. I spoke Farsi my whole life. I knew no English until I came to the United States and just kind of learned as I went in school. And so the first couple of years was really tough, but I never realized how difficult it is to live a lifestyle or to live a life at that age without knowing the culture, just the way to dress, way to talk, way to carry yourself.
Because it's not like moving from Europe where it'd be like slight variations of culture change. Like I've never been to Iran, but I'm going to guess that it's not at all like the United States.
It's very different. It's very different. If the government changes, I'd love to go back. But I can't go back because I would have to serve in the military for...
They retroactively...
Yep. And you can't rank up. You have to serve for about 2 years or so. But because of my religion, you would stay at the very bottom and you get the worst jobs possible. My uncle, my father, everyone who had went to the military... Well, actually, my father was before the revolution, but my uncle was after the revolution. And it was... The stories that he has was just,
practically torture or actual.
Pretty much. Yep. Pretty much torture. They treated you like a homeless dog. It's tough. Even the food that you ate was different than everyone else.
What did your parents do?
In Iran?
Or, I guess in Iran, and then once you came here.
So my mother did not work. My grandfather had his own business selling picture frames, and that's what he really worked on. He also fixed TVs and things like that in Iran. And my father was a truck driver, like an 18-wheeler truck driver.
Okay.
Yep. But every time, you know, they try to open up their own business or try to go further,
just get shut down.
Exactly. And so it got to the point where my family was just fed up. And I was growing up, and they wanted to provide a better lifestyle for me, just more opportunity in general. And they decided to move to the United States.
What did they do once they got here?
Oh, man, they did so many different jobs. You know, it was me, my mom, my dad, my grandpa, my grandma, and my uncle living in an apartment for the longest time. And, you know, they would job from job, switch over. But now, actually, my father is a truck driver again, ironically. Okay. But he's an owner-operator now, and he does his own thing.
I was going to say, it's probably a much better job here.
Oh, for like, sure. Actually, like, for sure.
In the U.S., you can actually make a pretty good living, especially like a long-haul truck driver.
Absolutely. No, he does well for himself. And, you know, I'm super proud of him because he still doesn't speak English that well.
Okay.
And I try to help out wherever I can. But as you know, I have so much on my plate already.
Yeah.
But, you know, so super proud of what he's doing, you know, with very little English. He's done really well for himself.
Yep. I mean, I wouldn't downplay what you've done either, because one, it's not like the University of Maryland is easy to get into.
Thank you.
Isn't their acceptance rate is like ridiculously low, isn't it?
That's correct.
You really weren't in this country that long before you got accepted into.
You know, I was not, but I knew that my family went through a lot for me to be here, and I couldn't waste that opportunity. So at a young age, I had the mentality that I had to make the most out of every opportunity that I got, because you never know when you're going to get another opportunity. And so that just goes back to who I am today and, you know, where I come from and what I've achieved in my life so far. But yeah, it was challenging times.
What did you go to school for?
So funny thing, I went to school for Persian studies.
Okay.
And I minored in a program called START, Study of Terrorism and Response to Terrorism.
Okay.
Believe it or not, I had some conditional job offers from some three-letter agencies.
I was about to say, like, I feel like that, like, you would be extremely valuable to the government.
I mean, the test that I took, I spoke at a, all my scores were at a native language. Yeah. And so they need people with expertise here in the United States. And I had the expertise, even more, I had actual experience, in that setting, and I was just so close to it. And so I was, I seemed very valuable to those three letter agencies. But
what you're doing now is probably a lot safer.
It's a lot safer and a lot more fun. Let me tell you that. But you know, those things didn't work out, just because I still have some family in Iran.
Oh, and so put there, if it was ever like you were ever found out, they would be instantly in danger.
Exactly. And so, you know, some conversations were had, and pretty much I was told to apply again when, some family members may still not be around or so. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't wait my whole life, and I had to try my best to make the best out of the next opportunity that I got.
Was it hard for your grandfather and your uncle to get out of the country? Like, did they have to be smuggled out?
It was extremely difficult. They came out legally, okay. But they had to jump through a lot of hoops just to make sure that, you know, their names are not going across certain desks or certain offices. It was nerve-wracking. I mean, this decision took them a very long time specifically because of these things.
Yeah.
And so it was really nerve-wracking, and props to them. You know, I don't know if I would have took the chance to leave the country with something like that.
It was a target on your back.
Literally a target on your back. And the worst thing is that you know how you have a social security card in the United States? You have identification card in Iran, and your religion is on there, on the card. And so, you know, ours does not say Muslim. And so that is a huge red flag for everyone. And so if they see that, they do a deep dive on you.
So instantly think like, this guy can't be trusted.
Exactly. Exactly. And so
he was a free thinker.
Hey, I don't know. That man is impressive. That man is impressive.
So I'm going to assume that you had no interest in alcohol or getting into the industry or making alcohol up till you met your wife.
So I'm a little bit embarrassed to talk about this, but I did not have any interest. And actually in our religion, you're not supposed to harm your body in any kind of way.
Okay.
And so you can take that as you know, as you wish, but you know, you're not supposed to drink either. And so this is actually against my religion.
Yeah, that was going to be one of my questions. I know like a lot of the religions in that region are very anti-alcohol.
And so, you know, I'm not a super religious person. I know that my religion had a big part in my life growing up, but you know, I'm not super religious about it. And I understand that as humanity advances, we need to advance with it. So, but yeah, it's against our religion. And it was actually a uncomfortable conversation to have with my parents.
That was going to be one of my next questions.
Even like at all.
They apparently were probably fairly religious if they fled
that's
a
correct.
Country at the risk of their lives
right.
over religion.
Right.
So how did they react?
So it was, you know, uncomfortable conversation, but I think that, you know, my parents are always going to support me no matter what. They've always supported me, and they took the same stance and supported me. They did tell me that they weren't necessarily for it, but they're going to support me no matter what. And I think at this point it's become so, normal in our family now, and or at least I'd like to think so.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it was props to my parents, you know. Now the older that I get, the more I realize what was happening and what they were going through as well.
Yeah.
But you know, it was an uncomfortable conversation, but it all went well, and up to this day nothing has changed between us and everything's the same.
Have they tried any of your products or or do they follow the rules?
they like to follow the rules.
Okay.
They don't drink. But you know, I think at some point I'm going to try to get them to at least have a sip, you know, here or there. But as of right now, no, they haven't tried anything.
Give them another decade or so to ease into the.
Exactly. This is still, you know, fairly new for them. This happened in about, this was 2015. So it's not that new, but it's still kind of lingering around.
So what year was it when you took over as head distiller?
So it was 2020.
Okay.
Is when I took over.
And your family has really bad timing for stuff.
You know, COVID was not fun.
That's how I said. Decide to leave the Middle East right at 9/11, decide to go into a hospitality business during a global pandemic.
Right, No, you're right. You're absolutely right.
It was impeccable timing.
Maybe it's just my luck. I don't know, man. It's my luck, but it was challenging times. I was lucky to be part of Dragon since 2015, which made things a little bit easier for me. It wasn't like I was jumping in 2020.
Yeah, you were kind of eased into it.
Exactly. I was eased into it. Actually, now that we're jumping back into Dragon.
First, let's make sure. Is there any other ridiculously interesting tidbits about your family or your life that you've left before we focus on Dragon?
There are some stories here and there, but you know, I don't want to take too much time talking about me. But maybe next time.
Okay.
Next time we could do something about.
We'll do a deep dive.
Exactly, we'll do a deep dive. I'll tell you some really funny stories that weren't so funny at the time that were happening, but you know, looking back a little bit better. But back to Dragon. So it was 2015 when we started operations, and it's a family owned business. So it's myself, my wife, my mother-in-law, my father-in-law. And so I've been involved since day one, but I used to have a full-time job when we first opened the distillery, and I would literally go to work, leave work, come to the distillery around 6 p.m., be at the distillery, you know, helping out wherever I could. Yeah. And it was long days and long nights until I was able to quit my day job in 2018 and make Dragon a full-time gig for myself. So, but yeah, in 2018, I came along full time, and we just kind of got going with everything. And the first few years, it was just family. We didn't have any employees. It was just our family members helping out, brother-in-law jumping in and helping out, sister-in-law jumping in and helping out, friends, things like that. But yeah, it was.
So when you first started, well, I mean, I guess from the beginning of Dragon, had you been interested in distilling, or were other aspects of the business what you were interested in?
So at first it was just, I was just really interested about learning about business in general. I didn't care about what the business was at first. Just because of my background after the whole, three-letter agency thing not working out, I always thought that I would become a business owner. And when I saw this opportunity, I was like, wow, this is my opportunity to learn about business in general. And once we started, I realized how interesting it was to produce spirits. And so it was just kind of something that I fell in love with. And so now I'm, you know, doing it all day, every day. Yeah.
And you're doing very well at it.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
So I was you've been involved for quite, almost a decade.
Yeah, I actually put the still together. You know, it was when the still came in, put the still together, and I knew nothing about distilling at that point. And I'm over here like, okay, what are these pieces? Yeah. How do I do this? And so literally everything that I've learned about business or distilling has just been as we went.
On trial the job and error. Training.
Exactly. And, you know, in my opinion, I think that's one of the best trainings possible. Going back to my life experience, I think that I learned so much from the experience that I had. Not everyone went through experience like that. And so I think that I gained a lot from it, and I've learned that I can learn things as I go. And that's just kind of how I applied that approach to distilling and the business. And, you know, so far I've been hanging in there.
So it's been, oh, probably about at least 7 years. And Dragon has changed a lot in that time. There's been a lot of things added to it. So you have the Dragon's Den now, which if you want to tell everyone what is involved in that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as I'm sure everyone knows, and, you know, at first you were only able to pour samples of spirits, and we weren't able to serve cocktails. Once the law changed, we were actually one of the first distilleries to have a cocktail bar, which we call Dragon's Den. And when we started the cocktail bar, Dragon's Den, we thought about, you know, what we could do to make it more fun. And so what we did was we added axe throwing lanes.
I am forever perplexed with the combination, and I mean, it's not just dry, like it's right everywhere, that the combination of axe throwing and alcohol.
Yeah, it's, you know, a lot of people are so hesitant about it. Yeah. That's usually the first question. When people come to the distillery, they're like, so I'm assuming we get to throw axes before we drink. And my answer is always, nope, you do better once you have a couple of drinks than you. So. But no, I mean, it's safe. All jokes aside, it is safe. We have a axe throwing guide who is always there, and they help you, you know, with technique on how to throw the axe properly, and they make sure that you're practicing all the safety rules that you should be. But we also have ninja star throwing as well, along with the axe throwing, which is really unique.
For some reason, that feels less safe.
They're not as sharp as you would think.
Okay.
Yeah.
It feels less safe, though.
I think they're more fun than axe throwing.
I've never thrown. I mean, I did as a kid because like I had my dad would buy me throwing stars, but I definitely did not know how to do it properly. And they were probably cheap things from like a flea market, right. So they probably weren't. I need to throw some. When I come to do the espresso martini, I'm going to throw some.
I was just gonna say, yeah, too. Absolutely, you got to.
I've gone axe throwing once, and it's a lot easier than I thought it would be.
It's really not that difficult. I mean, it's really just technique. A lot of people think that you have to throw the axe really hard.
No, it's almost easier if you don't.
Absolutely, and that's one thing that we try to explain to everyone who's throwing. But I don't know. I guess it's just natural for everyone to think that way. But it's really not that difficult. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I only ever went once. It was a great time, and I was way better than I thought. In my mind, I was going to go, and the axe was just going to bounce off the target every single time. Like, there was just going to be no axe sticking into the target. But I had a blast. It was a good time.
That's awesome.
But I think throwing stars is going to be more fun.
It is. I think you're going to love it. That's my favorite. I enjoy throwing stars a lot better.
And then can you give a – what's the – the history behind the name Dragon and like the motif that that the distillery leans into and which feels like at least has been a very good idea and has worked out well.
It has. I appreciate that. So essentially our the goal when we were talking about names and things like that, we wanted to have a different theme, just something that's a little bit different. Most distilleries, especially back then, there were actually no distilleries in Frederick back then. But when we were doing some research, most distilleries had a prohibition theme or just something more serious.
Yeah. And or just alcohol in general, like some sort of very alcohol adjacent.
Exactly. And so we thought, you know, why not do something more fun and quirky just because of the people we are? And so my father-in-law is a big D&D fan and player. And, you know, we were always interested in medieval things like the Renaissance Festival. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. And so we were like, you know, why don't we just do a dragon-themed distillery just to make it a little bit different? And so that's kind of what we played off of. And, you know, I know you've been in the distillery, but for folks that haven't been, we have the whole dragon theme. We have some Game of Thrones stuff. We have a bunch of D&D themed cocktails. And we have a lot of board games that people can play. As I mentioned, we have the axe throwing and the ninja star throwing. But we just try to create a medieval themed vibe in the distillery.
And if I remember correctly, like people come all over the place that are into like tabletop gaming and dragon or in Dungeons and Dragons.
Absolutely.
To the distillery just because of that tie-in.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we've actually gotten a lot of folks to start playing D&D again just because they didn't have that community around them.
Yeah. Because you host a weekly D&D game, right?
Yep, we do. We do. We have weekly games. People are more than welcome to bring in their games during regular business hours. We actually provide DMs for anyone who wants to learn or just doesn't have a group to play with. And so we also run something new that we're doing, just one-shot games. So for those who don't know much about D&D.
I know zero. Yeah,
okay. So D&D games can take a really long time. There are different campaigns that you can play. So one game could go a year or more.
Jeez.
So you would just meet regularly to continue your campaign. But there are also these things called one-shot games where you start and finish the campaign, you know, in one sitting or in one session. And so we're offering one-shot games now about once a month or so is what we're trying to do. And we provide the DMs and people come by and they get to play the one-shot games. And that's just making it more accessible for those who can't commit to a longer campaign. But, people are traveling, like you mentioned, to come in and play D&D. A lot of people bring in their own D&D games and it's just a lot of fun. We try to have fun at the distillery.
Have you ever gone to the Haven?
So I personally have not, but we've had employees who used to be a part of the Haven, and we've heard a lot about the Haven.
Anyone is not familiar, it's a place in Frederick. It's actually right next to the McClintock Back Bar, where they do all the nerd stuff.
Right.
Like they have like a room for 3D printing. They have a forge. They have a room for playing D&D. They have games all over that. I probably would have thought about it anyway. But one of my friends belongs there, and during Fire and Ice, uh-huh. I had walked down to McClintock.
Right.
He was on his way into the Haven, and he was like, "Have you ever seen it?" He was like, "No, I've never been inside. I've just walked."
Oh, you got to go inside?
Yeah. So he took me inside and showed me around. It's actually pretty cool.
I've heard great things
about
it.
They have everything in there.
Yeah, I've heard great things, and I've heard, you know, you're going to have a blast, and there's actually useful things in there. So.
Yeah, like basically, if you're into any kind of nerd stuff,
right,
that you should look into the Haven and join it, because it's cheap, too. It's reasonably priced.
Okay.
I think it's like $20 a month or something like that.
Wow.
You have access to everything in there,
I believe. Awesome.
Don't quote me on that. Could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's all it costs, and that gets you access to everything.
Yeah, no, I've heard nothing but good things about the Haven.
I know every person I've ever talked to that was a member or something like loves it there. So
okay,
but and it was they have a living room area set up with a big TV and very comfy looking couches. Like it was,
I'd love to collaborate with them. It sounds like we have similar themes. And
definitely is. There's plenty of crossover. I think
that's awesome. Okay, all right. Got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, you definitely look into that. Yeah. I mean, that feels like just a natural.
It does, right?
Natural tie-in. So when did the Dragon's Den open? That was like 5 years ago.
Dragon's
or so? It was like
Den
right
was
before COVID,
like
right?
Like 2019-ish.
Okay,
is when it opened, and so. We did a lot of the things in the den ourselves, as in, you know, decorating it, even building out the bar area ourselves. All the tables in there are sanded by myself and my mother-in-law. We sanded all the tables. We both went ahead and stained and did all that good stuff just to create that vibe. And one thing that we did from the beginning was we added a kitchen to the distillery. Now, in no way, we are not a restaurant in any way.
Yeah.
We just have some, you know, light fare for customers to enjoy just because they're drinking, and it's always a good idea to have some food around when people are drinking. And so we just wanted to have a complete package for everyone when they're stopping by, and that's what made us put in the kitchen as well. But it was a great decision, I think. When every time someone's drinking, they're always looking to have something to eat. Yeah. So that was a good decision as well.
Yeah, it's a natural tie-in. You get a little buzz on, and then you're hungry.
Yep. But you know, some people mistake us for a restaurant sometimes.
Okay.
And, you know, I just try to explain that we have some bar food, some light fare, but we're not a restaurant in any way.
And you do a decent amount of specialty events, right?
We try to. Yep, we do a good amount of events. We try to hold at least a couple of events per month, and that's just kind of something that we did from the beginning when we first started. Even before we had the den, we tried to have vendors and just throw on events in general, just to, you know, be a part of the community and try to have something different for people who support us.
You have like a cool tastings like pairing thing coming up, right?
Oh, don't you? That's so we're doing our first ever pairing, and that is in collaboration with Dope Pizza and MR Cheesecakes.
All right, cool. I had that in my head, but uh-huh. I didn't want to just say it and be wrong, so I prefer that.
No, it's gonna be a Valentine's pairing. It's actually,
unfortunately, that was yesterday. This is gonna come out on the 16th.
Yeah,
so you've missed this. But it still sounds cool if you want to talk about. Because I mean, I feel like Dope Pizza being there, so like I would imagine there's opportunity for things like this to happen.
Right. So
again,
so we were actually the first establishment to carry MR Cheesecake. And Dough Pizza uses our facility as a commissary kitchen. And so we have that relationship with them already. And so we decided to do something for a Valentine's pairing, which is actually going to be the day after Valentine's Day. But, you know, it's going to be a cool event. I'm looking forward to it. It's the first pairing that we've ever done, a dragon.
That's alcohol and food pairings are just awesome.
I mean, people are super interested in it. So I'm looking forward to it, to see how this first event goes. And if all goes well, we're going to be doing more.
Oh, you're doing a intro to chainmail making?
Yeah, that's something that we've been trying to bring to the distillery for a while now. And I think that we finally found the right partnership. And so our first class is coming up, and people can sign up and take the class and actually learn how to make a chainmail keychain.
Okay.
And this is going to be the first class that we're going to do. And depending on how it goes and how much interest there is, we're going to potentially offer more classes with bigger projects. So, you know, you can create other types of chainmail that's going to take a little bit longer to make.
I was going to say, that feels like something that's going to take forever.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like we haven't had the class yet, but it sounds like it's going to take about 2.5 to 3 hours to create a about a 4-inch keychain. So it's going to be a while, but it's unique. It's an art in itself, and so I'm looking forward to it.
That's pretty cool.
It's awesome, and it just fits in with what we're doing.
I'm guessing these are so are they like the chain mail, and then it has like almost scales on it?
Yeah, so essentially it's rings that are that can be opened. And so you open each ring, and you have to connect it to the next ring, and so on and so on. But you have to do it in a specific way,
okay,
or else it's not going to come out right.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Crimson Weaves website. I'm assuming that these are the keychains, and actually look pretty cool.
You have Thomas is the person who's going to be teaching the class, and he's awesome. He loves this. This is his passion. And I'm excited to have him there and have him show everyone else how to create chainmail.
And that is on February 22nd.
Yep. Yep.
February 22nd. Which is not in the past if you're listening to this right now.
That's awesome.
Do you host trivia, right? Oh, it looks like you like rotate through specific themes. That's cool.
So we have weekly trivia every Friday, and we have a pretty good following for Fridays.
People,
and
that's just, love trivia.
They really do. They love trivia. They love it. I never would have thought that people would like trivia this much. But every Friday we do just a general trivia, and people come out. People come out every Friday. And so people also like themed trivias, and we try to do at least a couple of themed trivias each month. But we have a great relationship with Poorhouse Trivia, and they come out and throw on, you know, trivia games, and they do a great job, and people really like working with Poorhouse. And so we're just lucky to be partners with them as well.
That's cool. So you want to talk about some of the things that Dragon offers, because you have a pretty wide range of products that you produce.
Yeah, we have. So the reason for that is because we understand that everyone likes something different. And so we try to have something for everyone who comes into the distillery. I am personally passionate about whiskey. That's probably my favorite spirit to produce and to drink. But you know, we create a bunch of different vodkas, flavored and non-flavored. We produce rums, same thing, flavored, non-flavored, or even aged. We produce brandies, whiskeys, gins, so you name it, we produce it. Really, the only thing we don't produce is a tequila, and that's because you can't produce, you can't call it tequila if you make it here.
An agave spirit.
Yeah. That's correct. And I'm just not exactly sure if the general public is familiar with the term agave spirit. And so unless we're able to explain it to every single person, I don't know how well it would do.
I feel like it would not sell well. Definitely not as well as tequila would.
I completely agree with you. And I think that's the reason why we haven't come out with it yet. Yeah. But down the line, I think it's something that I want to do just so that I can gain the experience and learn how to do it and just understand it a little bit more. But we'll see in the near future. But yeah, we have a bunch of different products. And as I mentioned, we produce all of our cocktails with our spirits. So having the wide bunch of variety of spirits makes it easy for us to produce cocktails.
And you're still doing ready to drinks, correct?
We are, yeah. We were actually one of the first distilleries on the East Coast to produce RTDs, and those are doing really well. Our most popular one is our pie canned cocktail. That's our lemon meringue moonshine mixed with lemonade.
Sounds like something people would like.
They do, and it was I really enjoy that cocktail. It's really special to me because it was created on my wedding night. Oh, nice. So one of my best friends who was a groomsman, he was like, hey, you guys just came out with this lemon meringue moonshine. What can I mix it with? I was like, dude, I'm getting married in like 10 minutes.
Figure it out yourself.
Yeah, I was like, figure this out. Like, I'm not doing this right now. Okay. And so he went to the bar. He came back. He was like, dude, I just mix this with lemonade. It's the best thing I've ever had. And I'm like, okay, he's just saying that because we make the spirit and, you know. And so I tried it. I was like, whoa, this is really good. And instantly, you know, I was like, all right, when we get back to the distillery, we're canning this. This is going to be the next product we can. And so ever since, it's been our number one selling RTD, and it's been doing really well.
I love lemonade.
Yeah, it's and it's such a simple simple cocktail, but it is so good. It is so unique, so different, and it's all because of our lemon meringue moonshine. But besides that one, we produce a punch, a rum punch. We produce a gin and tonic. We produce a bourbon and cream soda. That's probably my close first to second favorite.
That was one of the first ones, right?
That was one of the original ones. I think that's the second ever canned cocktail we came out with. We did change the recipe just a little bit because when we came out with it, each can was 38 proof. And so it was, don't get me wrong. It was really good, but it wasn't for everyone, you know, it was for select individuals. So we thought, you know, why not produce it for everyone instead? Yeah. And so now it's 20 proof and people really enjoy it now.
It's not like it's really light. Right. Anything,
but still
slightly more accessible.
Exactly. Exactly. But besides those, we produced the Cuba Libre as well. And I think that's about it. We have about 5 or 6 different RTDs right now.
So what else do you have going on at Dragon?
Man, we have a lot going on at Dragon. We do a good amount of contract distilling at Dragon. That's just something that was not necessarily in our plans when we first started, but it seemed like there was a lot of demand for it. And so, you know, we never go out to try to get contracts for the distillery. It's always individuals coming to us asking us to produce for them, and if it's the right project, you know, we do try to help out. But we are currently contracting for about 5 to 7 different companies right now. Some are local, some are not, but you know, it's something that's growing, and I see that getting bigger and bigger for Dragon. And I'm super excited about it. And to be honest, it's just simple. We're really good at producing spirits.
Yeah.
And so why not stick to what we are really good at? And so I'm super excited about the whole contract distilling portion of the distillery. And I am looking forward to growing that as the distillery grows.
Well, in some ways, it's probably easier, right? Like, you make what someone else wants you to make, and then you're done.
Exactly.
You don't have to figure out the marketing of it. You don't have to figure out how to sell it. You've already sold it.
So we do the easy part.
Yeah.
And the individuals who are interested in having their own spirit line, they do all the hard work. And, you know, it's for those who don't know, it's really challenging to find sales channels, distribution, things like that. It's not impossible, but it's challenging. And so, it's pretty easy for us to just produce it and have someone else take over from there.
Yeah. I think you're kind of downplaying the difficulty in making it, but if that's something you're like, obviously it's only easy because it's something you already know how to do.
Right. And it's we're just playing to our strengths here. And so that's what we are really strong at. And so that's what we try to stick to.
What is the best way for people to keep up to date with what's going on at Dragon?
So we have mainly it's going to be our social media. We post on our Instagram, which is Dragon Distillery, and also our Facebook account.
You know what I have found is one of the most infuriating things is when a business does not have the same handle on all of their social media.
I could not imagine. I can't imagine if our handle was not the same.
It's infuriating.
Yeah. I bet.
When doing anything with a company and then like you find that there's like a couple letter difference between the two or something.
Right.
I'm like, why would you do that?
No, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It can create some confusion there. But yeah, it's mainly our social media. We do send out newsletters as well. To people who follow us. But on our Instagram and Facebook, we also have a link tree where they can click on it and see all the event dates that are going to be going on. Also release dates for new spirits that are going to be coming out. But mainly social media. We really lean on our social media heavily.
Want to answer some intentionally stupid questions?
I would love to.
Who would win in a battle between a ninja and a pirate?
Oh, man. I don't know. I think that's a tough one.
I mean, it's not really. There's a clear answer.
Is there a clear answer?
Yeah, there's a clear answer. Most guests don't agree with me, but there is a clear answer.
Oh, man. See, I want to say I would like to go with a pirate.
That's the answer.
Is that the answer? Okay. All right.
So, yeah, you're correct.
I was so hesitant about that just because the ninja has all those skills.
Yeah.
And the pirate's probably drunk.
Yeah, but that helps. I mean, they always say, like, drunk drivers typically don't get hurt because they don't.
Because they're so drunk they don't.
Well, no, you don't tense up.
I see.
I feel like that would also come into play with a fight, too.
Okay.
Also, they have guns. They have cannons.
Right.
It's a pirate. Oh. A lot of people wholeheartedly disagree with me, but it is definitely a pirate.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to go with, but I was so hesitant, especially after you said there's a clear right answer. I was like, all right, if there's a clear right answer, it has to be the ninja, but I'm about to say pirate.
It's clearly a pirate.
Gosh, that makes me feel a lot better.
flats or drumsticks?
I'm a flats guy.
That's the correct answer also.
Gosh, that was an easy one. That was an easy one.
Does pineapple belong on a pizza?
You know, if you would have asked me this a couple of years ago, I would have said no, but it is something that's growing on me. So I know the general public's probably going to disagree with me, but I'm going to go with yes.
The correct answer is no.
Oh, man.
Although I will concede that if you also have some sort of like a hot pepper on there, then it's acceptable. Like I used to think it was absolutely repulsive.
Uh-huh.
And then someone had me try one with it was either jalapenos or like banana peppers.
Right.
And just that little contrast of heat makes it taste much less disgusting.
I agree with you. There's a local pizza shop in Frederick that does that, and they add jalapenos to it.
Okay. Which one's that?
Pistaro's.
Oh, okay.
Yep. And they have
good pizza.
They add jalapenos to their pineapple pizza, and it's phenomenal. And
I still never ordered it. But.
so my wife is the reason why I got into the whole pineapple thing. I used to be so against it. And she would always be like, "What? Why won't you just try it? Just at least give it a chance." And so,
because I know it's bad,
exactly. So I started to give it a chance, and unfortunately, it's growing on me. So,
is Nickelback a good band?
Yes,
you're solidly a fan. That was a definitive yes.
You know, it's actually funny. I don't have much I don't have a big background when it comes to bands and even like movies or TV series, yeah. Just because of going back to my background.
Yeah, I was just gonna say with your upbringing, it probably wasn't like because a lot of that's your exposure from your parents.
Exactly. And,
like, they're not gonna be playing.
You ask my mom who Nickelback is right now, she will laugh in your face and be like, "Who? A nickel?
You need 5 cents?
Yeah, exactly.
What are you going to do with that?"
No, exactly. So I actually, my wife makes fun of me a lot because she'll be like, "Oh, here's this movie or this band," and I'm like, "I don't know who that is." And she makes fun of me. I don't know how much time we have, but she actually was really mad at me because I had never seen The Wizard of Oz. And
right. There are a lot of like marquee movies that I've never seen.
Right.
But that's bad.
That's what she was saying.
I mean, it's understandable.
Right.
But still, it's unacceptable. I hope you've remedied that.
I watched it last weekend.
Okay. And what did you think? Was it, I don't know, is that good if you watch it for the first time as an adult?
It was good, you know. I don't necessarily see like the big hype that everyone has around The Wizard of Oz.
I mean, I think you need to see it first as a kid.
Right.
And then there's the nostalgia factor that makes you like it better too. Plus, well, also it's was made, what, like 30 years more?
Don't quote me on this. If I remember correctly, it was like 1939.
That sounds right.
Yes, or something like that.
Way more than 30 years, you idiot.
And so
30 years ago, that was like the 70s. No, it wasn't even the 70s. It was the 90s. Christ, I'm old.
Oh, man. Jeez, 30 years ago. Yeah.
It was the 90s.
Hey, no, it
I'm
was
going to pretend like I didn't just think about that.
It's crazy when you think about it.
It's crazy.
My daughters refer to anything that happened in the 90s as happening in the 1900s.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Oh my God. I always see those memes where it's like, wow, I want to apologize to everyone who, when I thought, you know, the 50 year olds were old.
Yeah.
And that's like, now I just want to apologize to them because it's like, oh my God.
Because now you're young.
Exactly. You're young. Now you're young.
Yeah. But like 50 is the new 20.
It is. Yep.
So there's probably a laundry list of like iconic movies that you haven't seen.
Tons. And I get the weirdest looks.
Do you know
people.
Who Michael Jackson is?
Okay. Yes. I know that. Michael Jackson, I knew him. So fun fact, I used to have a tape recorder, and that was the first tape I had in Iran. It was Michael Jackson. Oh. You weren't allowed to buy it just out in the open.
So you had a bootleg of
it?
Yep,
you had to boot. I had a bootleg of it. And I used to listen to it. I was in like fourth grade, fifth grade. And I used to just like shake my head to it. I understood zero words to what I was listening to. But that was the big thing. So I wanted to be a part of it. But yeah. No, I mean, I get crazy looks from people when I tell them I don't know certain bands, certain movies, certain shows, celebrities.
Yeah.
And it's just nothing that those kind of things never really interested me. But you know, people are like, "Who are you? Where did you come from?"
I ran.
Yeah, literally.
And I escaped with my life.
Yep. So yeah, it's that's an ongoing challenge for me.
Yeah. I'll give you a pass.
Okay.
I probably should not be given one for the list of like iconic movies I haven't watched. If you were a NASCAR driver, you're familiar with NASCAR, right?
All right.
If you were a NASCAR driver, who would your three sponsors be?
Ooh. All right. So M&M's. I love M&M's.
What's your favorite flavor?
favorite flavor was always brown growing up.
I was thinking more of like the new variations that they have, but I'm pretty sure the brown, green, red, and blue all taste the same.
They are, but fun fact, as a kid, I used to think that the brown had extra chocolate. And so that's
so
why.
So in your mind, they were extra chocolate.
That's why. But some of the new flavors, I really like the hazelnut one. It's like a Nutella almost.
I'm not a fan of that one.
That one's good.
Have you had the caramel cold brew?
I have not, but I love cold brew.
The caramel cold brew, or it's cold brew. Yeah, it's caramel cold brew. It's amazing. Okay. They're so good.
I got to try that.
Yeah, you do. Because they're amazing.
Okay, I got to try that. But so I need two other sponsors.
Yeah.
That's tough.
We got hung up on the first one.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm about to just name all food sponsors. Yeah. I don't know if Oakley would be a sponsor, but I'm a big Oakley fan. Growing up, I worked for Oakley when I was in college.
Oh, cool.
And so I just have this unique connection to Oakley. Every time I see it on TV as a sponsor, I'm like, wow, that's so cool. Like, I was a part of that. Really, I wasn't. I was just working in a retail store. But in my head, I think I created Oakley or something just because in college I worked in Oakley for a couple of years.
That's a company with a really cool history. Like the heritage of the creation of the company, the founder, and then the other things he went on to do after Oakley with Red Camera.
Yep, absolutely. And you know what really gravitates me towards Oakley, in all seriousness, not just because I work there, but because they produce quality things.
Yeah.
I mean, I wear my glasses every day, and my kids literally jump on them. They smash my glasses, and they're always fine.
I can't remember what the process is called for how they made, because I don't think they have X metal frames anymore, right? Like the Juliets and
they do not.
Yeah. So like I can't remember what the process of making those ones, but I remember reading a story about like the machine that did it, like malfunctioned or something, and like exploded and shot through a wall of the factory.
Yep. And you know those glasses, like the X metals that you're talking about. People are after those. Those are super serious collector items.
Oh, seriously?
Oh,
I have a ton of them.
Dude, you could sell them probably for like $600 each, if not more.
I need to look into that because I have a few like early ones that are serialized.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the Romeos, the Juliets, and things like that.
I don't have any. No, I do. Yeah, I do have. I don't have. What are the? There was ones that were like the pennies. Pennies were the small ones. I don't have any of those. But I have a pair of Romeos. I have a pair of Juliets. I have a couple pair of Juliets, and then some X metal XXs.
Yep. Those are hot. If you're not wearing them anymore and you don't care about them, I recommend calling Oakley first. You can send them in to be serviced.
See, I thought they stopped doing that. They refresh because most of them have like the. There is no one listening right now that cares about this other than the two of us. Because the rubber bushings and stuff are worn out on some of them.
Exactly. And so you can get them serviced. And with the X metals, they kind of can wobble sometimes. Yeah. And they'll tighten them up for you and fix them up and then put them on eBay.
I'm going to do that.
I'm just going to need 10% commission.
All right. You got one more.
One more. Probably be Dragon Distillery.
I mean, I was just going to suggest that. It has to be, right? Yeah.
It has to be.
What is your go-to gas station snack?
Oh, if they have taquitos, I get taquitos and they're so bad for me. And sometimes I eat them. I'm like, why am I eating this? And usually I get taquitos from a gas station. I'm trying to stop, but that's usually my go-to.
They're good, though.
I love taquitos. It's guilty pleasure.
Does anyone other than 7-Eleven have them, though?
Rutgers.
Oh, okay.
They have it. They call it like a something different, but it's a freaking taquito.
I wonder, is that a common word, or is that like a 7-Eleven trademark?
It's probably a 7-Eleven thing. I think Rutgers calls it a tornado or something like that.
Oh, yeah, it's probably trademarked then.
Yeah.
If you could be the best at anyone, if you could be the best in the world at anything, what would it be?
I'm already the best at being me. Best at anything in the world?
Yeah.
Oh, man. You know, as a kid growing up, I always wanted to play in the NFL. And if I could do that, I would be the best NFL player to ever live.
What position?
I always wanted to be a quarterback.
Okay.
As a kid.
You wanted to be the star.
Playing backyard football, I used to think I was Peyton Manning. and that's just something that – and, you know, the whole football thing goes beyond just football. I think football is so important to me because it's what transitioned me – or is what helped me learn about the culture and learn, you know, help me.
Oh, it's like kind of what you embraced to.
Yep. I was always a big kid growing up. And so in sixth grade, I would speak very little English to the point where I didn't even know the rules of football. But I had my mom sign me up for football. I was like, Mom, like, I got to do this.
Yeah.
And so I played Little League football and, you know, fell in love from day one. Played in high school, and it was great. I loved it. And I feel like football really connected me to the American culture.
What position did you play?
Man, I played everything.
I'm guessing you were not a quarterback.
I was not. I mainly played defensive end.
Okay.
I played defensive end. As I grew, I played a little bit of linebacker, and I played tight end.
Growing up as a Steelers fan, linebacker was always the position that I idolized.
I would have thought safety was something like Troy Polamalu or
something.
Yeah,
but I think I'm definitely older than you. So okay. Like when I was growing up, it was like the linebacker cores that were the scariest people in the field.
They always had a good defense. Yeah. So,
if you had a pet parrot, what's the first thing you would teach it to say?
Jeez, these are good questions. I would teach it to say, I don't know. Probably just hello.
It's kind of boring. So, this is the first boring answer you've given. I'm disappointed in you.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm trying to think what I would.
I mean, you should have it swear in Farsi.
Oh, that's pretty good. But you know, I don't.
Then your parents would get mad at you because they would come over and start swearing at your mom in her native language.
You know what would happen if my grandmother came over and that parrot
be done.
I would not be here anymore. Yeah. They would be so disappointed.
Never
in
mind.
Me.
Strike that. Bad idea.
What else you got for me?
What's the dumbest injury you've ever had?
Dumbest injury I've ever had. So. Knock on wood, I haven't been injured that many times. Most of my injuries have always been from football and lacrosse. But
so Maryland.
One time in Iran, I was running on the sidewalk, and someone pulled out in front of me, and I fell and literally tore the whole front of my shin like wide open. And it was just like just a regular fall. Like it wasn't anything. It was just like a kid running and falling. And I guess it hit the side corner of a step on the street. And my whole front shin was open. And a little piece of whatever it was sticking out. And they had to cut it off. And, you know, and especially being in Iran, I don't necessarily want to know how well trained they were. But it was
actually wasn't a doctor. It
was just someone they found, you know, but it was just a regular fall, you know?
Yeah.
Just a normal kid falling from running. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that's the answer you were looking for.
No,
but
that's a dumb one. I mean, it's kind of just like dumb slash worse. And yeah. So that was good because it. If you won the Powerball tomorrow, what's the first thing you would purchase?
A house for my mom.
Gotta go and be noble.
Actually, more than just that, but you know, help out my family as much as I could. They've been through a lot.
What is the dumbest purchase you've ever made?
Made a lot of those. where do we start? Dumbest purchase I've ever made. You know, I would have to go with some of the cars I've owned in the past. You know, growing up, I was really interested into cars, and I was in this whole thing where I would buy a car and in my head, I was souping it up, but I was just adding like an intake to it. And so I went through a lot of cars. I bought an S2000 that was a lot more expensive than it should have been. And I sold it, obviously, and bought my wife a ring with it. But that's probably the dumbest thing I bought was cars and just messing around with cars and putting money into cars and selling them, losing money, and doing it all over again.
Yeah, you can make a lot of dumb decisions when it comes to cars.
I mean, it was as dumb as it would get. So I was just literally putting money down the drain.
What's your favorite one that you owned?
probably my S2000. I really enjoyed that car. They only made 177 of them or something like that. It was a white with a hard top, red interior, super limited edition. They stopped manufacturing that car in 2009, I believe. And I had a 2008. And, you know, that color and color scheme and everything was just super limited edition. Okay. So one day I'll own another one.
I had a Dodge Dakota Sport convertible. It was a factory convertible. I think there was like they made 1,600 of them total.
Okay.
That truck was so much fun.
That was your favorite car you've ever had. Nice. What happened to it?
Got totaled.
I'm sorry to hear. That hurts.
Yeah. I mean, they're not worth anything. So if I wanted to buy one, I could go buy one now.
Right.
But it like functionally they're garbage.
Yeah.
It was just so like as a teenager, it was a lot of fun.
Well that's exactly what I'm thinking about. You know, as a teenager, you probably, you know, love that car. And so that's why.
And I'm pretty certain if I had one now, I would start to drive it and be like, this is a crappy truck from the 80s.
Right. I don't like this anymore. Yeah.
All right, Harab, thank you so much for your time today. I can't wait to try your espresso martini.
Of course. Thank you again for having me here.
Oh, absolutely.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you, and it's always a good time, always.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. Cheers.
Thank you, everyone.
The Uncapped Podcast is produced by Graham Cullen and me, Chris Sands. Be sure to like us on Facebook. And if you've enjoyed these podcasts, please leave us a review on Google Play or the iTunes Store. A special thanks to Double Motorcycle for providing our theme music. Thanks for listening.
Oh my God, that's good.